Hey guys, I don't know if you're like me, but I love Count the Dings and everything it has to offer. I just can't find everything I need. You know, I know about Cinephobe, and I know about the mailbag, and I know about Bomb, but that's all we do, right, Amin?
No, we do so much more.
What?
Yeah, absolutely. If you sign up, patreon.com/countthedings, you'll find a plethora of other content, fresh content, extended content, the OG Pod Overflow, the Cinephobe Cold Opens that we've taken and made their own thing to live only there, the Rewatchingtons, Bomb in its full and unadulterated cut, early drops of Cinephobe episodes, and so much more.
You said the OG Pod. Now, is it new or is it old?
Mace, I'm glad you asked that. It is a new incarnation of the old OG Pod.
Oh.
So it's me, Zach, Trey, Waz, Tom.
I love those guys.
Just like we always were, going back to the True Hoop days, we're recreating that magic, recapturing it, and putting it back out. We're talking hoops, we're talking pop culture, and most importantly, we're talking for 40 minutes for free, but then another specific Patreon exclusive segment for every one of those episodes.
Funny enough about that OG Pod, you're getting Tom and Trey on Mondays, you're getting me and Waz, aka Zosny, on Wednesdays. Amin's floating in between.
I'm a floater.
You never know when you're going to get Amin in those, so you got to listen to them all.
And what if I'm not sure what Maze looks like, because I've always thought he's a fat man with a fedora, he's got a weird voice. How can I see for myself what this Maze character actually looks like?
It's crazy you don't know the answer to this because it's the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page.
What?
The CT5s on the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page. You can look at all of us.
You can get all the OG pods on YouTube too, at Count the Dings 1 on YouTube, at Cinephobe Pod on YouTube. Patreon.com/countthedings gets you everything all in one feed. You can link it to your Spotify. And now enjoy the show.
Hey, listener, Zach Harper here. Underdog Fantasy, the easiest place to play fantasy sports. Also, fastest growing fantasy app in the industry. Here's how it works. The Pick'em game. Pick whether your favorite players will have a higher or lower stat total in this week's game for a chance to win big. How big, you ask? I'm so glad you asked that question, listener. You can win up to 100 times your money in a single night. Pick between 2 and 5 players, build a pick'em entry. You can also do rivals picks. You can put like Tyrese Haliburton and Jalen Brunson against each other, and whoever has more points, more assists, more rebounds, whatever you want to do, that is your rivals pick. I would maybe go with Jalen Brunson in these playoffs. By the way, in the regular season, Jalen Brunson, scoring tear, going higher on his point totals all the time. Joel Embiid, whenever he did actually play, higher on his scoring totals all the time. Victor Wembanyama, for the next 15, 20 years, here's a pro tip for you, take higher on the blocks. That's right. So you're probably wondering, how do you sign up? Oh my God, listener, you are full of good questions today. Sign up with the promo code DING, that's D-I-N-G, to claim your special pick first-time deposit offer, up to $250 in bonus cash. $250, man, that's a lot. Visit underdogfantasy.com or find them in the App Store. And don't forget to register with our code DING, D-I-N-G, to claim your special pick and first-time deposit offer, up to $250 in bonus cash. Must be 18 or older, 21 or older in Massachusetts, Arizona, 19 or older in Alabama and Nebraska, and present in a state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. Concerned with your play, call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.ncpgambling.org. Arizona 1-800-NEXT-STEP, that's 1-800-639-8783, or text NEXT STEP to 53342. New York, call the 24/7 HOPE line at 1-877-8-HOPE-NY, or text HOPE-NY 467-369.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome, welcome, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, children and babies, cats and dogs, mammals and rats. Welcome to the latest edition of the Woke Bros. I'm your co-host, Wazdy Lambre, a.k.a. Big Waz, a.k.a. the Haitian Sensation, a.k.a. the Haitian Irritation, a.k.a. the your favorite Haitian. Of course, I'm joined this week by my brother, my man, Nando Villa, Michael Brooks happens to be in Brazil. No, he's not at Carnival. He's actually doing a really important interview with President Lula. So we got Nando in his place. Nando, welcome aboard, man.
Hey, thanks for having me.
I got to say,
I got to come up with some of my own AKAs.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. We got and they got to be racially problematic.
Okay.
You know, because, you know, like Jamal, I mean, excuse me, Michael's middle name is Jamal.
Yeah, I know. Mine's which Duncan, is which is hilarious.
Yours is Duncan?
Yeah.
Oh, my God, Nando, come on. Come on, you're such a bad brown guy. Jesus.
I know, I'm horrible. I'm an imperialist. What do you want me to say? I mean, I come from a long line of imperialists and fascists. That's what Spaniards are.
Your middle name is problematic for the like the exact opposite reason that Michael's is, right?
Exactly, yeah. It's, like, we should switch.
Yeah, right. Like, yours is just like, wait, there's no reason for your middle name to be that white, bro.
Yeah.
Like, relax. Like, your name is not Lord Dartmouth or something. Like, what the fuck going on?
My dad almost gave me Malcolm as my middle name, which would have been hilarious.
Wow.
Yeah, he really wanted a Scottish name because he went to boarding school in Scotland when he was a little kid for one year. There's no middle names in Spain. Like, Spain doesn't have middle names. Okay. So there's no, like, tradition of that. So he thought it'd be funny just to give me a Scottish name. And the two finalists were Malcolm and Duncan. And I got
Duncan. Malcolm is a Scottish name.
Yeah. Yeah. Malcolm and Nigel. Like, those names are, like, super Scottish. You know, like Malcolm McDowell, the actor who's in Clockwork Orange. Like, you know, that's like a very kind of Scottish name.
Which is hilarious because in 2020, 100% if you meet a person named Malcolm or Nigel, they're black.
Oh, black, 100%.
There's no question. Like, yeah. I don't know how or why that happened.
Yeah.
Maybe white people were just like, fuck it, Malcolm X, took over the fucking name. We're done with it. Yeah. But, like, dude, like, Nigel? I have never met a white Nigel in my life. I've met plenty of Jamaican ones, though.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's probably a relationship there, like some sort of imperialist thing. But, I mean,
of course.
It does seem like black people have appropriated it and taken it as their own, and now white people
Same with Tyrone and Jerome and a few other ones.
Right.
But moving right along to today's show, we're going to talk about the Democratic debate. Things seem to be heating up between Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren's campaigns, and it seems it's sort of getting personal. We want to get into some of the other candidates, of course, the other big guys in the race, Joe Biden, who's the front runner currently, and Buttigieg, who's just, you know, the centrist that won't fucking leave us alone. And then, of course, we're going to cover Senator Cory Booker dropping out of the race. But, of course, first, man, we got to get into last night. The hot news on social, on cable news, in the New York Times, the Washington Post, is essentially Elizabeth Warren and her campaign claiming that Bernie Sanders, at an event in 2018, told her that it was his belief that a woman could not defeat Donald Trump for the presidency. This, of course, came up during the debate. Bernie vehemently denied the charge. Elizabeth Warren neither confirmed nor denied that it happened. They had a weird exchange at the end of it.
CNN reported yesterday that, and Senator Warren confirmed in a statement, that in 2018, you told her that you did not believe that a woman could win the election. Why did you say that?
Well, as a matter of fact, I didn't say it. And I don't want to waste a whole lot of time on this because this is what Donald Trump and maybe some of the media want. Anybody knows me knows that it's incomprehensible that I would think that a woman could not be president of the United States. Go to YouTube today. There's a video of me 30 years ago talking about how a woman could become president of the United States. In 2015, I deferred, in fact, to Senator Warren. There was a movement to draft Senator Warren to run for president. And you know what? I said, stayed back. Senator Warren decided not to run, and I did. I did run afterwards. Hillary Clinton won the popular vote by 3 million votes. How could anybody in a million years not believe that a woman could become president of the United States? And let me be very clear. If any of the women on this stage or any of the men on this stage win the nomination, I hope that's not the case. I hope it's me. But if they do, I will do everything in my power to make sure that they are elected in order to defeat the most dangerous president in the history of our country.
So, Senator Sanders, I do want to be clear here. You're saying that you never told Senator Warren that a woman could not win the election.
That is correct.
Senator Warren, what did you think when Senator Sanders told you a woman could not win the election?
I disagreed. Bernie is my friend, and I am not here to try to fight with Bernie. But look, this question about whether or not a woman can be president has been raised, and it's time for us to attack it head on.
Nando, I want to hear sort of your feelings about, you know, just the accusation being levied just in the first place.
I was frankly really shocked when I saw it. I mean, I did not think that Elizabeth Warren would resort to that kind of tactic. I mean, it is the sleaziest thing you could do. It is the sleaziest attack so far in the entire Democratic primary by far. I mean, it's at the level of the Clinton campaign in 2008 releasing the photo of Obama dressed as a Muslim with no comment. Just like, oh, look, we found this. Make up your own mind. You know, this was it reeked of desperation because notoriously voters hate it when candidates go negative on each other. And the only reason to resort to that kind of negativity is if you're really desperate and you really want to bring someone down. You cannot really bring yourself up by going negative, but you can bring someone else down. And that's what Warren was doing with Bernie. I mean, it's just there's no other way to read it. In theory, this was a retaliation to the political story that came out that some Bernie volunteer in Iowa in a private Slack channel was cycling these talking points to give the volunteers in case a potential voter asked them why to vote for Bernie instead of Elizabeth Warren. And the talking points were about as mild a quote-unquote attack as you can imagine, which it just points out that Bernie's base of support is lower income and less educated, whereas Warren's base of support is more wealthy and more well-educated, which is objectively true in any way you can read it. And again, as far as political arguments go, that's about as tame as you can get. The Warren campaign was apparently very outraged by this story. This, to be clear, this was not from Bernie himself. This was not even necessarily from a high-level staffer. It was from an internal Slack channel, not necessarily something that was divulged publicly. So then Warren came back and sort of her campaign leaked to CNN that in a private meeting in 2018, in which it was only Bernie and Elizabeth Warren in the room, he told her that he didn't believe a woman could be president. And then four anonymous sources who, quote unquote, had knowledge of the meeting and heard about it afterwards, so like weren't there firsthand, confirmed it. And then when Bernie campaign denied that, Warren herself confirmed that it happened on the record. She said, he said this to me. Of course, that was the night before the debate. Of course, he was going to be asked about it. And then the way the CNN woman asked about it, it was as if a given that he said it. He was like, why? She's like, why did you say that? And he's like, well, like, as a matter of fact, I didn't say that, you know, because it's a he said, she said. There is no witness to it. You know, this idea that this was a reported story with corroboration is ludicrous because the only person who can confirm it is Warren herself. And the only person who can deny it is Bernie himself. No one else was there to confirm or deny what happened. And then when Bernie flatly denied it and the CNN woman confirmed that he flatly denies it, he goes, I just want to get you, he goes, yes, I did not say that. She then goes to Warren, how did you feel when he said that? I mean, and Bernie, all you could do is just start laughing because of how ridiculous the whole thing is. And it just, it was very strange to see Warren double down. I kind of half believed that she was going to de-escalate in the debate heading into it because I thought that there was no way that she could live with herself after doing such an obviously sleazy thing. I mean, she knew exactly what she was doing when she confirmed that story. It was just wild to see it. It was wild to see the moderators just completely steamroll over Bernie's denial and just assume that he did say it.
You know, I'm of a couple of minds here, right? One, I think it's weird to me that both campaigns seem to be shocked that a competition has broken out in this fucking primary. Like, I'm sorry, like, this is what it is, right? Like, this is what it's going to be. Like, you guys are trying to become the president of the United States. Like, it's not going to be this namby-pamby, you know, okay, guys, let's play nice and let's pillow fight, blah, blah, blah. And I think that's both campaigns, like, acting shocked and clutching your pearls that Bernie's staffers would go out and try to get people to vote for Bernie. Like, what the fuck are you talking about? And then, you know, even this attack, like, even on its face, even if you want to think that it's true, I mean, is it the worst thing? Not even if you assume that it's true, like, is it so bad to assume that Americans are too sexist to vote for a woman president? Like, I don't, like, the statement in itself, I don't even think, just factually, like, a woman ran against a historically poor candidate, like, unlikable, terrible guy, and lost, right? Like, I'm not saying that a woman can't win. The idea that somebody would say that and it would be this horrible thing, I just find kind of juvenile. And it's hard for me to hear from both campaigns when you consider Ted Cruz's dad was accused of being assassinating JFK.
Yeah, but that's
he called
funny.
He called his wife ugly and fat and disgusting. Jeb Bush, he basically said he couldn't get his dick hard. He was low energy. He didn't have the freaking, you know, the libido. Like, we're talking, he called Marco Rubio, implied that he had a small penis. Like, all of these things, right, that he did. And they all, one by one, fell in line to make sure that a Republican won the presidency. I think that's, like, to me, that's the lesson that needs to be learned in all of this. That's one. But two, what I will say that I do find disturbing on the part of Warren, I think it's obvious that the people around her have convinced her that the person that she needs to go on the offensive on is Bernie and not Joe Biden, which I think is interesting. Because I think it's interesting, because I think it says something about who those people would rather see win. I think ultimately the people on her staff, who they think they can then go get a job from, right, if Warren's thing fails. Like, it feels like they've made a conscious decision to make it a Warren versus Bernie thing. And quite frankly, Nando, at the fucking debate, they both took, like, basically refused to attack Biden on Iraq, and this was a foreign policy focused debate. Like, this is something that you have to hammer him on. This is something that you need to, this needs to be an anchor, a noose, or whatever the fuck you want to call it, around this guy's neck forever. And they both refused to do this. And so it just makes me wonder, like, when these guys, Iowa's 18 days away and these guys are still playing with kid gloves. Like, you know, to a certain level, I understand what you're saying when you're like, yo, it's disgusting to try to associate Bernie with sexism. It's ridiculous and stupid on his face. But on the other hand, man, it's a campaign and people are trying to win. And I think just as a faction, we just get caught up in these things too much, man. Like, at 2016, I feel like people are learning the wrong lessons a lot of times. And, like, the lesson to me is, like, oh, my God, Bernie said this about Hillary, and Hillary and them said this about Bernie. And, motherfucker, Donald Trump won the presidency, guys. Like, that's the lesson that should be learned. A lot of the stuff that we harped on in 2016, I think we need to move on from.
Well, I guess what I'll say is that I think you're right that this is a campaign and people should have it out. And I'm all for that. And I think many people have been calling for Bernie to be more aggressive, both on Biden and on Buttigieg, but even on Warren herself. And he's refused to do that so far. Like, he has not gone after Warren, really, at least head on. I think the difference is like when you're making sort of political arguments for your candidate, that's one thing, especially if they're based in fact. But this was just a full-on character assassination based on a thing that is impossible for him to deny. Right. It's based on probably a lie. Let's be honest. Like, there is just no way he said that. Even if he believed that, which he clearly doesn't. I mean, this is the man who was the only white elected official to endorse J. Jesse Jackson in 1988 because he believed that a black man could win the presidency when no one else would. You know what I mean? Like it just flies in the face of everything we know about him. So it's obviously untrue. And it's just different when you straight up resort to that kind of to that sort of underhanded lying. I mean, that's what really got to me. If she had made a point about Bernie being too left to win, or you know that his policy of Medicare for all was unreasonable or unrealistic or whatever, those are political arguments and they're fair game, I think. But just a straight up character assassination in this underhanded way is really, really, really shocking for me to see. I mean, I think you mentioned them going after Biden on foreign policy. I think Bernie was gearing up for that in the lead up to this debate. I mean, he'd clearly been more aggressive in the public appearances that he's been doing in the last week, talking about the Iraq war vote for Biden and comparing it to his refusal to vote for the Iraq war. I mean, he clearly went after Biden in a much more aggressive way, and he was probably gearing up for that in the debate. And then this Warren thing completely derailed that, right? Because it put the focus on them. And so it didn't give Bernie the space to then it put him on the defensive. It didn't give him the space to go on the attack, you know, which is a shame. But at the end of the day, I still think, you know, it's going to blow over and it's not going to be good for Warren. I mean, she's too far back in Iowa at this point. Bernie's tied for first place in the polls. And in 2016, if you look at the polling on the day before the Iowa caucus, he was 10 or 12 points behind Hillary. And then on the day of the caucus, he outperformed the polls by about 10 points. He basically tied. She won by like 0.3 or something absurd. Like, so if they're tied in the polls and Bernie has this superior organization and has more passionate volunteers and has, you know, more fundraising and more donors and all this stuff, it stands to reason that he will probably outperform the polls once again in Iowa in this caucus state, which is a totally absurd system. I mean, I was there in 2016 for the Iowa caucus. And I swear to God, like if they don't get UN election inspectors in there soon, I mean, it is like the most rinky dink way to decide an election. but yeah, so I think it will blow over. I mean, I just think what it does is it damages, you know, at the end of the day, we can disagree with Warren or whatever, but she would have been a good ally to have in a potential Bernie administration. And now it just feels like she's burned those bridges to a degree that is, you know, that seems irreparable at this point.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know that Bernie's a Barry type, right? Where Barry's like, yeah, you guys put the Kenya thing out there, but I won. And like, go ahead, go be Secretary of State. Who cares? You know, so I don't know if Bernie has a lot of that in him. Ultimately, again, I just don't think this is that damaging. The sexism charge will never stick. And that's why I think the people in her campaign aren't very smart, man, because like this is not the type of thing that could stick, right? I think the type of thing that sticks to Bernie is like when you talk about rigidity. He's not flexible. He can't convince people because he's too hard-headed and he's too, you know, he's browbeating. And like you hear that shit from normies all the time, that Bernie's too strident and that his supporters, like those are the type of things that'll stick to Bernie. The idea that Bernie's a sexist and he hates women and he's illiberal in that way will never, ever, ever, ever stick to Bernie. I want to get to Warren and Buttigieg in a second. I mean, excuse me, Biden and Buttigieg, and just the way sort of the debate gets framed and what I want our listeners to be paying attention to. But first, March 28th in New York City at the Bell House in Brooklyn, Count the Dings will be coming to you live on stage. Myself, Amin L. Hassan, Zach Harper, Tom Haberstroh, Ethan Strauss, the evil producer Jade Hoy, Rob Lopez will be in the building, Tony Mays, Nissan Bluestein, Eden Lin, I mean, the entire Count the Dings crew, Mariano Bivens will be in attendance, and we are lining up our craziest lineup of guests in the history of the Count the Dings live show format. We will have announcements in a few weeks, but Trust me, you do not want to miss this. In the past, we've had such great people as Jay Adonde, Jake One, the legendary hip-hop producer, Pablo and Bomani Jones of ESPN fame, Taylor Rooks of Turner and Bleacher. The list just goes on and on. Yeah, Nando. Mm.
Yeah, sounds like a great show.
The list goes on and on of the type of people that we've had, you know, walk on that stage. It's the Real, of course, did a great bit the last time we were in New York. Oh, no, 2 times ago when we were in New York. We've just had incredible guests in the past, and we're trying to line up the greatest guest lineup that we've ever had. So, of course, you do not want to miss this. That's March 28th in Brooklyn, New York. Get your tickets on countthedings.com. When you miss it, don't hit my line and say, oh, Waz, we should have been there, blah, blah, blah. Don't miss this show. It's going to be incredible. I put my name on it. Make sure you get your tickets at countthedings.com. All right, so, Nando, just a couple of things. You know, I think the consensus coming out was that Mayor Pete is just an unserious cat. He is just such a product of the donor and consultant class. It's just like he's not a human being out there. He's just a bunch of talking points and notepad reading, and he just embarrassed himself, in my opinion, out there. I thought he was horrific. What did you think about Mayor Pete's performance?
Well, I mean, I'm obviously biased because I despise Mayor Pete with every fiber of my soul. He is everything that I hate about politics, a certain kind of person too, like a certain kind of striver who like has his whole life has just desperately wanted to be president and become a Rhodes Scholar and, you know, volunteered to go to Afghanistan in 2009, like an insane person, after it was like very obvious that like that war was a completely immoral disaster, you know, and the sort of 9/11 thing had already worn off. Like, you know, it's just everything about him makes my skin crawl. So, yeah, that being said, at the end of the day, his problem is going to be black voters. I mean, and, you know, it's one of those things that really makes you believe in politics that a guy like Mayor Pete has such low support with black people. I mean, he's got like, you know, it's close to zero. It's within the margin of error of zero, at least, with black voters, because his record in South Bend as the mayor was, you know, like it was the worst version of a Democrat, like a woke Democrat, just like throwing black people under the bus constantly at every single opportunity he could. So, yeah, I mean, I was actually surprised that the CNN moderators gave him a pretty tough question on his lack of black support, which his campaign has tried to explain away in myriad ways. Yeah, they released it. I mean, that is just also like just absolutely shocking to release the focus group that said that, yeah, black people are too homophobic to support a gay guy.
As if Luther Vandross doesn't exist. I always make that joke, but I mean, exactly. Come on.
Yeah, exactly. you know, and you know, like when to hear him talk about, it just drives me crazy to hear him talk about his experience serving in uniform, you know, like all that stuff. Like it's all so contrived. Yep. You know, he volunteered after he'd already gone to Harvard. You know, he was set. He didn't need to go to war, right? Like he wasn't like a working class person that needed to pay for college or anything like that. I mean, it was a pure cynical political play.
Builder. Yeah,
exactly. For sure.
And you know, man, have you ever seen the movie Booksmart?
Yeah, great movie.
So that's Mayor Pete to me. Where she's learning that she was a dork for no reason.
Right.
It's just that's you, Mayor Pete. You spent your time doing all of that stuff, wasting all your time. And no disrespect to your service. Like, of course, I got respect for anybody that goes out there and put their lives on the line. Like, you know, you can say what you want about it, but like, man, being in a foreign country, a bunch of people speaking a language you don't speak, not knowing a damn thing about anything and knowing you might die. Like, you know, to come out of that on the other side is, you know, something is that's not something you can denigrate. Yeah. That being said, right, you do have a record as a mayor, right? Like, you've done things like outside of that that just disqualifies you from being president, as far as I'm concerned, especially not a Democratic president, right? Like, you can't win the nominee having your record being who you are. And, you know, and the final thing I'll say about Pete is that the thing about Warren that surprises me, but that I don't think a lot of people get is, like, I don't think her support is all that progressive. She has a reputation as being super progressive, but I don't think her support is. Her support is the same as Mayor Pete. Mm-hmm. It's egg-headed, overly educated, professional class of liberals who theoretically and in theory on paper can understand the need for, you know, universal college and healthcare for everybody and all of those things. But at the same time, it's like, I mean, I got healthcare and I've already got 3 degrees. So, like, is it really that big of a deal? Right. Yeah. Like, I think, you know, the appeal of Mayor Pete and Warren is that they see themselves in those two people.
Yeah.
They're educated. And they're professional. They're enlightened enough to and not call black people niggers. Right. Like, they see
the lowest bar ever
in those people. Right. And I think that's the appeal for them. But that, like, these people aren't actually their fan bases aren't actually progressive. And I think there's a huge overlap between those two.
Well, your instinct is exactly right, because that has been played out in the actual polling. If you remember a few months ago, Warren jumped out to the lead. She challenged Biden nationally in first place, and she jumped out to a lead in Iowa. And then she started fading hard. And just as she started fading, Mayor Pete is when he had his surge. So it was very clear that all those Warren supporters were actually going to Mayor Pete. And if you look at Warren's base of support, the Bernie internal Slack channel volunteer was exactly right. They tend to be wealthier, educated liberals. I mean, which, like you said, they know how to say the right things to come off as, like, these woke progressive types, but they're the kind of people that would block a school integration effort if their kids were, you know, about to get their school integrated with a bunch of black kids from the hood, right? Which is, like, what Samantha Bee and Jason.
Which, hey, Nando, I aspire to one day be one of those type of liberals, man. Hey, get off my lawn. Remember that scene in the OJ Simpson show on FX where he comes back from the Bronco chase and he says, "What are all these niggas doing in Brentwood?"
Yeah, it's so good. I mean, it's so true. Like, that's exactly what, like, who the type of person that would support a Mayor Pete. Yeah.
And this is the thing, right? Had there been no Bernie, if he wasn't in existence, I would absolutely be supporting Elizabeth Warren's campaign. 150 million%. I don't think, like, when you think of something like the CFPB, there's nothing in anybody else's record that even comes close to that. When it comes to, I'm talking about Mayor Pete and freaking loathsome Joe Biden, like, you know, this is some, like, she cares about stuff that working people care about.
Yep.
I don't think it's enough of her platform for my personal liking, but she cares about it and she has a grasp and an understanding of it. Whereas these other people are just completely out the loop. We can move on from Mayor Pete. Sure. And Biden, I think just a couple of things, man, because of this foreign policy thing. First thing I want to say to our listeners, you notice if you watch the debate, how are we going to pay for this? How are we going to pay for that? How are we going to pay for this? How are we going to pay for that? When it comes to getting to see a doctor and not going bankrupt, going to college and not going into hundreds of thousands of dollars in debt. Just things that normal countries don't have going on. Normal rich countries, I should say. Normal rich countries. We are the richest country. Just to get that out the way.
Not just right now. Ever.
Ever,
yeah.
Right? Just to get that out the way. But when it's like, hey, man, the Ayatollah thinks the U.S. should be backing out. Shouldn't we be engaging them in Iraq? Shouldn't we be engaging them in Iran? no mention of how much it's going to cost.
Oh,
just,
just understand
how the argument is always being framed to you. You know, you're going to have to ask these questions yourself, because the people who have been entrusted with the responsibility of framing these issues for us so we can have the most thorough understanding of it are freaking either extremely stupid, which I just reject offhand, or they're carrying out a different type of agenda.
Yeah.
And the bottom line is they never ask that question. Bernie's the only one that's like, trillions of dollars were spent on a needless war in Iraq.
Yeah.
We got nothing out of that war. There is no democracy there. We made Iran, who you guys think is our enemy, stronger there. Their influence there has grown since. The region has become even more unstabilized. We, materially, as a country, I'm not talking about Halliburton, Dick Cheney and his homies who got, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars in government contracts to help make that war happen. I'm talking about America as a country got nothing out of that $1 trillion investment. That shit will never come up from a moderator when he's asking a candidate whether he wants to start a blow up Iran or not. Yeah. And I think it's something that our listeners need to be stay conscious of, because, again, the gatekeepers at MSNBC, CNN, and God knows Fox News don't give a fuck, ABC, they're never going to frame it that way, even though that is the case.
So last year, a UN group of scientists, a United Nations group of scientists, did a study to figure out how much it would take to basically fix global warming, or at least buy us a significant amount of time to fix global warming. And they came up with a number that was $300 billion. If with $300 billion, yeah, it actually buys us up to 20 years of time to fix global warming,
wow.
Right? That is less than half of the annual military budget of the United States, right? Think about that. I mean, we could cut the military budget by half, which would, no one would even notice, because we would still have the largest military budget by like a factor of 10. And, you know, we wouldn't have to cut healthcare or any of the good stuff. Listen. And we could just give the UN the $300 billion to fix climate change for at least buy us 20 years.
And here's a little secret. And if you talk to people in the military, they tell you, they're like, they always overask budgetarily, because they're like, it's not that we need it. It's that, well, just in case we might, you know, we don't want to have to go back and ask for more. It's not that we need it. Like the amount of waste, like, again, the word waste is sort of a dog whistle nowadays to mean black people on welfare. Like when you hear people talk about government waste, it's literally that's all they're talking about.
Yeah.
When they say government waste, they're not talking about military planes that go nowhere and never get used and money gets poured into it. Or ask somebody who goes to like their base and then like, yo, bro, the amount of equipment that we got that never gets used, you know, they end up donating it to police departments in Indiana who are never going to use it for any real reason, but they'll bring it to, of course, but they'll bring it to, you know, yo, my cat's in the tree. Like, and I'm being facetious right now, but you get what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Like, there is an incredible amount of waste in the military. Like, shit. They are bloated. It's the most bloated faction probably in the world. Okay? They are bloated. So much waste. That's why it's important what Nando just said. Sorry, Nando. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. If any of your listeners or any of the listeners out here have worked at a big corporation, say like a, you know, a big multinational corporation, and have been a part of a budgetary process for their department, they know that it's not a good thing to save money for your department. Say your department got, you know, a $10 million budget for the year and you guys spent $8 million, meaning you saved the company $2 million. What that means is that your budget for next year will be cut to $8 million.
Yes.
Right. So what you often see is like in December, these departments will spend a bunch of money, like buying a bunch of staplers and, you know, whatever, just to get, just to fill out the budget to the $10 million that was allotted. So then they, so then that next year they can then ask for, you know, an extra 15% or whatever, you know what I mean? And that's exactly how the military works. Like they don't necessarily need all the money, but they spend all of it and then they ask for more because, and then they make all kinds of justifications to then ask for more. I mean, it is no coincidence. This is a fact that you can look up on Google, and it is no coincidence that the richest county in America per capita, the richest county in America is where the Pentagon is. That is not a coincidence. That is 100% correlation does equal causation, right? That's because the money flow of that $700 billion, it's not just to pay soldiers and to pay for their health care. It's to buy big weapons from private manufacturers like Boeing or Booz Allen or yes. Raytheon or whomever. And there's a bunch of people that work for those companies or are investors in those companies who are making a lot of money off that gravy train. And that's basically the number one job of a U.S. president in the last 40 years is to keep that gravy train going, which is why we constantly make up these monsters around the world that we need to slay because they're very, very bad. I remember when Gaddafi in Libya was very, very bad and he was going to do a genocide and we had to kill him. I remember when Saddam Hussein was very, very, very bad and he had weapons of mass destruction and he had used chemical weapons on his own population and we had to kill him. I remember when, you know, in Somalia, the Mogadishu situation was very, very bad and we had to send, you know, like you could just come up with, and that's keep the gravy train flowing. Yeah.
Remember ISIS?
Yeah. Like, I forgot about them. Forgot about them.
Remember when ISIS was coming to chop your head off in your living room as you played NBA 2K? Yeah. Do you remember that?
I had completely forgotten about ISIS.
These guys in the desert on pickup trucks were scaring the shit out of Americans.
Right.
Like, and that's another thing. Like, we're such pussies. We're so easily scared. It's disgusting. We're so easily like, oh my God, that guy has a turban on.
MS-13, the guy with the face tats on MS-13 is going to come and rape your daughter in Long Island.
One of my favorite things, and this is all just marketing, by the way, when they go, oh, we can't house this terrorist in a prison. Why?
Yeah, why? We can't try
him. On U.S. soil. Why?
Right. We're such wimps.
Oh, he's such a super terrorist. We can't put cuffs on him, lock him in a cage like you do everybody else. He's not getting out. Like, what are you talking about?
We didn't even have the guts to, like, bury Osama bin Laden. Like, they had to dump him out in the middle of the sea. You know, like, they had to dump his body out in the middle of the sea. They couldn't even, like, bring his body back because we were scared.
Because if you bury him in the dirt in the U.S., his body is going to sprout like other terrorists. Yeah. Like, out of the fertile U.S. soil.
Exactly. I mean, it's really pathetic. I mean, it's just... stupid. But that's who we are. The safest people in the history of the world, by the way. Like, there is like the threat of violent death for an American outside of from maybe
ridiculous.
The cops. It's ridiculous. You know, no population has ever been safer ever in the history of the world.
It's ridiculous. And, you know, I just wanted to say that about the military and I've said this on the show again, but it's important to just remind people, like, when you're listening and watching these things, like, what is being fed to you? And Biden, again, he's a bum. He's a scrub. He's a celebrity, though. He's got name recognition, so he is a formidable foe.
Yeah.
I'm sick and tired of everybody taking it easy on his ass. They need to go no Vaseline on him, man.
Yeah.
They need to go crazy on this dude.
You know what the Biden campaign reminds me of? You know, like in the NFL, when a team jumps out to like a big lead and there's like, you know, there's like 8 minutes left in the fourth quarter and they're up by like 3 scores and they just go into prevent defense.
Yes.
And then they just like allow the other team to just come back.
Yes.
Like the Biden campaign, you know, had a huge advantage going into the campaign, right? The early polls when he first joined the race had him up in like the 40s, close to 50. You know, no one else was even close.
I mean, now, I think, Nando, that's the whole reason he got in.
Yeah, absolutely. He's like, look at me. I can win this thing.
They're like, I can do this.
Well, also, the frustration of not getting in 2016 because our friend Barry told him not to because he had cut a deal with the Clintons after 2008. You know, Obama was young and naive, and he was very, very afraid of the Clinton machine, and probably rightfully so because the Clintons are famously vindictive. So he's like, okay, I'll cut a deal. You guys, you know, I'll give you Secretary of State, and in 8 years from now, I'll clear the lane for you guys in exchange for you not undermining my presidency from our own side, which they absolutely would have done because the Clintons are vindictive, petty people. So when 2016 rolled around, Biden was like, hey, you know, I'm the vice president. Usually, like, look at the history of vice presidents. Almost all of them end up running. Al Gore ran, George H.W. Bush ran, you know, Nixon ran, and Biden, and Biden probably thinks, probably correctly, that he would have beaten Donald Trump. Yeah, because he does pretty well in those states in the Rust Belt where Clinton did horribly, you know. So that's also the other thing is like that frustration of that, man, I could have been president right now had I just disobeyed Obama, basically.
disobeyed daddy Barry. Lastly, man, let's just talk about Cory Booker, the end of his campaign. I gotta say, Mike is a lot higher on this homie than I was. I was just put off by his fake Barack Obama impersonation way back. The Bain Capital stuff got on my nerves. I don't know. There's just something that he's just disingenuous. He just doesn't feel like, I feel like I'm being lied to every time the guy opens his mouth in public. Or maybe it's not that I'm being lied to, but somebody's putting on a performance for me. Like, they're not being themselves. Even if they're not saying an act, it's like, you're not in that enthusiastic about that thing, that fact that you're telling me. Yeah. You're not, like, there's just something, I don't know, slippery about this dude that I could just never get behind. And he just felt like a, you know, an even more centrist Barack Obama, which, like, I just have no interest in that and never did. I never thought he was going to be formidable. I just didn't think he had for instance, Kamala Harris, I thought actually did have a magnetic personality. It's just that, you know, she was locking black mothers up and shit like that. Yeah. Like that, she couldn't overcome it. Like, I thought she actually had something when it comes to charisma and a personality. And I was like, okay, this is something formidable. I just never saw that with Booker. So, you know, it's not surprising to me that his campaign quickly flamed out.
Well, Big Waz, your political instincts are once again right on point in to point out that Cory Booker feels disingenuous. I want to tell you a story. Cory Booker, for many years, in many campaigns, not just this campaign, or not just his campaigns for president, but his campaign for the Senate and his campaign for mayor of Newark, would talk about growing up with his drug dealer friend, T-Bone. Guy named T-Bone. Who was
never
this, like,
been
bad
a drug
dude.
Dealer in the history of drugs named T-Bone. I can guarantee that for a fact.
Well, some intrepid reporter in New Jersey actually tried to look into this and was like, okay, who is T-Bone? Let me find this guy. Oh, and he, like, asked the Booker campaign, and they
this
kind of,
why,
like, stonewalled him.
By the way, man.
Yeah, but it's true. I mean, he found out that T-Bone doesn't exist. He's fake. Cory Booker made it up to make him seem like he was, you know, growing up around drug dealers on the streets of Newark. You know, that's like, it's a complete fabrication. Which is just the funniest thing to make up, right? It's just like the funniest thing. Because even, like, Joe Biden's weird Corn Pop story, like, Corn Pop was a real guy. You know, they actually looked into it. Yeah, they looked into it. Corn Pop actually existed. T-Bone is a complete fabrication. So, yeah.
Why would you say a drug dealer's name? Like, I don't understand that. Like, why? Like, just
say, like, yeah, my drug dealer friend. You know, like, no one would ever look into it.
Yeah, a dealer, and, you know, he wanted to be a doctor, but he just couldn't, blah, 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 blah. Like, whatever, man. You could have told us any kind of lie. You had to name him T-Bone and give it away. Yeah. Anyway, you know, his campaign dried up, couldn't gin up the support. The money started drying up. I think the Democratic establishment would have been more than happy to have him.
Oh, absolutely.
Had he been able to mount a successful campaign, like, he would have been the donor class would have been like, that's our guy. Like, everybody would have loved him. Pelosi types, Schumer types would have ran behind him with the quickness, with no problem whatsoever. He's just part of that wing of Democrats, right?
As the senator from New Jersey, he's basically in the pocket of Big Pharma and Wall Street. So, and he's shown in the past that he's willing to play ball, right? That if, you know, he is willing to play ball with the donor class. I mean, there was the famous riposte to Barack Obama when Barack Obama was talking smack about private equity. Cory Booker went on Meet the Press and bravely came to the defense of private equity, right? the donor class and the establishment of the Democratic Party would have absolutely been happy with Cory Booker. But I want to get your take on, you know, this idea that, which I obviously think is regrettable in many ways, but the fact that there's no more black or brown candidates up there on the debate stage. My feeling is like, yes, that's a shame, but it also, you know, like, none of these black candidates got any support from actual black people. So then, like, whose agency do we care about, right?
Again, if Cory Booker came out and ran a John Edwards campaign and he got no support, I'd have been disheartened, right? If he would have ran some Jesse Jackson poor people's campaign, I would have been disheartened.
Yeah.
Or Kamala Harris. Castro, like, he didn't have the progressive bona fides, if you will, but, like, he ran a pretty progressive campaign, so, you know, he should have got some more traction for sure, but no, these people weren't progressive, so, you know.
No love for Andrew Yang, guys. I mean, Dave Chappelle just gave him the nod.
Nah, he got to miss me. He's a billionaire. He got to miss me. He got a super miss me. And again, he's minority, but, like, again, like, look at what we're talking about. We're not talking about AOC, right? Like, if an AOC type of minority candidate ran in this field, that's a different story. If they couldn't get any traction and they were just getting their tires blown out at every turn, I'd have been like, okay, all of the black people, Deval Patrick.
He's still in there.
Oh, exactly. What platform is he running on? It's not a progressive one. It's an establishment one. So, I don't know why I should care. And here's the thing, too, that I think often happens, and I think it even happens amongst people on the left. They make this conflation with minority equals progressivism.
Oh, yeah.
Just because something is minority-based, it's inherently progressive, and that's just not true. You understand? It's why so many of us and I count myself among them. Just, we assumed Barack Obama was a radical.
Yeah.
Simply because he was black.
Yeah.
Nothing this man said or did before the campaign was in any way radical, crazy, you know, flaming hair, liberal. Nothing. He did nothing to nod in the direction of radicalism, to nod in the direction of progressivism or leftist thought and ideas. Nothing. We all just put that damn cloak on him because he was black. And I think that's what people are doing here when they complain about a lack of minorities and women and all of that. It's like, those two things are not always the same, man. Having a black candidate, like, okay, being about issues that probably disproportionately affect minority people, I don't think you need to be a minority to be for those issues,
right?
Is what I'm saying. But that's just the way I see it. And, you know, and I will say this, this is the problem with having a broad coalition, is that it's hard for these candidates to thread the needle.
Yeah.
It's hard to appease the black people in the party, appease the brown people in the party, appease the women in the party, appease the white people in the party, appease the professional people in the party. Like, this party is such a big freaking tent, and that's not hyperbole. That's just what it is. Like, there are only two types of white people in the Republican Party, poor whites and rich whites. That's it.
Yeah.
That's it. That's it. There is nothing. There's nothing. In this party, there are poor blacks, poor whites, rich whites, poor brown people, rich brown people, like professional brown people, educated. Like, there are so many types of people to contend with.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's happening. Like, to be able to thread the needle is so freaking hard. It's why, like, Barry, you know, there's a reason why he didn't come out and say, I'm a proud black man, and start right. talking like James Brown, motherfucker. He mentioned that Trayvon Martin could have been his son, and people lost their goddamn minds.
Yeah. That's also why I picked Biden in the first place.
Yes.
To assure, you know, like, skinny white people that he was black,
but I've got this really old white guy with me.
Yeah. I'm you not going to do anything crazy. Yeah.
And I think that, to me, that I think that, like, it's just, it's not nuanced, the opinion. They're like, oh, we're the brown and black people candidates. It's like, I mean, give me some brown and black progressives.
Yeah.
Okay? In 4 years, 8 years, when or if people like AOC, Ilhan Omar, mm-hmm. are still involved in politics, I bet you they'll run, and I bet you they'll get broad support. I bet you. Within this party.
I think that's right. I think that's right. I mean, it will, you know, the Democratic Party is notorious for being bad at sort of nurturing the bench. This is like me being like a, you know, centrist political wonk, you know, for like Yahoo News or something. But yeah, I mean, that's something that the Republicans are very good at. They have all kinds of organizations which foster young Republicans. They get Republicans nominated to like school boards and local city councils and things like that, and they're very well funded, and it gives them this like basically very deep bench of people to choose from when it comes to nominating people for Congress and Senate and governor and even president. Democrats like don't do any of that. I mean, in Ryan Grimm's book, he talks about how basically the only thing that you need to be able to run as a Democrat is the ability to fundraise a huge amount of money, which is not a good thing. They don't do anything to foster this recruitment phase of young politicians. And I think, you know, the effect that people like Omar and AOC will have is just that they'll basically inspire so many people to be able to think like, actually, I could do that. Like, I could be Ilhan Omar, you know, like if Ilhan Omar could do it, I could do it. Like if AOC could do it, I could do it. But we need that, like, not just at the big federal level, the sort of sexy positions of Congress and Senate and president, but, you know, city councils and state legislatures and all that stuff, where a lot of power actually gets wielded in America. And if we fill those positions with actual leftists, especially if they're part of the sort of multiracial working class, then you're able to see a huge, profound change in this country.
Yeah, man. Well said. That's our show for today. Again, make sure you get your tickets for the live show in New York, March 28th at the Bell House in Brooklyn, Gowanus. Make sure you go to countthedings.com. Please, guys, make sure you become a patron of Count the Dings. It's a new year. We're going to have a brand new offerings. We're taking it a step further, man, because we want to reward the people who really support us and make shows like Bomb and Woke Bros and, you know, Pack Your Knives and things like that. Make those shows happen. The Mailbag. We want to support. We want to reward those people for supporting us. And I think we got a lot of excited stuff rolling out in the future. So make sure you become a patron of Count the Dings. Man, Nando, thank you once again. You were fantastic as usual. I know you got to go. Be a pretty boy over there on the Young Turks or something today. I know you all over the internet sphere, man. Yeah. So thank you for stopping in with us. We really appreciate the time, man.
Hey, thanks for having me anytime.